Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for organizing this great meeting. I have listened to very many interesting talks and asked lots of questions. And this is my talk now, but I will continue asking questions. So I try to incorporate magnetic fields in my talk and in my title to make a connection. We already had a lot of discussions about the role of disk in outflows and the role of magnetic fields. I would like to acknowledge contribution and collaboration with very many people. Let me just mention Monika Mościbrocka, who is here, Nick Higginbotham, Stefan Luketic, who was my student, and Sergei Dyer, who is my current postdoc, and graduate student Tim Waters, and Randall Dunn, and many more. This is just like an overview, the talk of mine. So I will give a short introduction and then talk about specific winds, thermally driven winds, a little bit more details and a little bit different perspective and trying to see a bigger picture. And with the emphasis on the role of spectral energy distribution. And then I will move on to line-driven disk winds and what are the effects of magnetic fields on line-driven winds. And then I will try to motivate application of everything that we know about OB stars winds and CVE winds and X-ray binary winds to AGN. So basically, it is to connect our discussion today and what we will talk about tomorrow and day after, and how about the yesterday. I will not talk about protoplanetary disks. I was thinking about any way of incorporating dust into my simulations. I have no papers on dust. However, I noticed that I have some old dusted papers, so I'm going to show results from them, okay? And of course, I will mention that I will use dust in future work, perhaps with some of you. Okay. We had a wonderful discussion about MHD and internal disk structure and why we are using disk as a boundary layer only. Well, here's my part. We have a disk, and we know that mean rotation flow is the source of energy. And we want to know what is the flow of energy, in particular, what is the thermal energy, because that is the energy that the gas will lose through photons, and that's something that we will observe. Okay, so we'll have an emission of electromagnetic radiation, magnetic fields, and gas. And you can do it locally, globally. And I am not an observer, but I do observe work of others. For example, Steve Balbus, John Hawley, Jim Stone, Charles Gammy, Julian Krolik, and many more people, some of them here. Okay, and I read the papers, and I saw terms like this, not in this order. So I tried to come up with my order of what is going on. So we see MRI turbulence, waves, fluctuations leading to stress. Then this has to be dissipated. So I read papers by Omer and his group. Viscosity, resistivity, damping of waves. Then we go back to fluctuations and we get buoyancy, and that is related to dynamo. Then we have, from that all, we have internal energy, yeah. What we get from that, well, it has to be diffused or advected, not necessarily radially, but also vertically, okay? Recent developments in the field. And finally, we have this radiation, emission of radiation, magnetic fields, and gas. So this is where I enter. Winds, okay? So yes, it is. It would be very nice to have the entire disk structure with all of that nicely modeled, and then from that have outflows. I want to come back to Santa Barbara, so perhaps I will organize a meeting when all of that is included and the winds in 10, 15 years before I retire. Okay. So I do acknowledge importance of magnetic fields, importance of the internal structure of the accretion disk. But I want to be practical, okay? So Nick already mentioned what can drive an outflow. So depending where you are in a disk, you can rely on a thermal expansion, evaporation, if the thermal energy overcomes gravitational energy. Okay, radiation pressure, you need radiation field and opacity, both. The product of the two is the key. Magnetic fields, they are everywhere, okay? And rotation is important because it's the source of energy and shapes the outflow, okay? Which of the two is important, dominant, and where? Well, you can attack them individually, exclude, but these are good times to study this because many groups, but in particular groups led by Jim Stone, developed very reliable, robust numerical methods, Athena++, where all those equations, black is fluid, red is radiation, blue is magnetic fields, can be solved simultaneously. Yan Fei will show us nice results from that, I think, during this meeting. Okay, and we have source terms for due to radiation in in momentum. I just want to remind you what matters is the product of radiation field and the total opacity, absorption and scattering. Sorry. And in source for energy, it's the absorption only, okay? So when I say radiation driven, it could be exchange of energy between radiation and matter and momentum, okay? But I am not going to show you any results from solving those equations. I just first want to motivate or identify the parameter space when we can reliably solve the problem properly. Because I have few students who can devote a year or two in setting up boundary conditions, okay? Now, we should, and all of us, or most of us, benefit from years of effort and insights of people who studied outflows and stars, okay? But there are important differences one has to keep in mind if we want to apply this, the thinking from stellar outflows to disks. Disks rotate, they are extended, they are magnetized, and by being extended, they have temperatures ranging from very high to very low. So it is a totally different configuration. And they may have X-rays, and the spectrum is not single temperature black body, but it's a compilation of very many different spectra, okay? Making a connection with what we heard yesterday and today, if you have an inner part of a disk, which is usually more energetic, produces more sources, it is irradiating outer part, okay? So once you reach certain temperature, gravity is overcome by thermal energy and you have thermal wind, and that temperature is determined by Compton temperature that Nick mentioned. And what is important in connecting this is that some systems are known to have a wind in X-rays, and sometime later, radio jets, and they switch. So there can be a connection. This slide is part of my use and use accompanying paper by Joe Nelson about one of those systems. Okay. So what we did with Stefan Luketic, we took the data from the paper by John Miller et al., who told us, as Chris Reynolds mentioned, about not only velocity of the outflow, which comes from the width of the lines, but also the density, and also photonization parameters. So it is not just to have a disk wind. It has to produce regions that move fast enough, are dense enough, and of the right photonization parameter, okay? So we did that, but at the end of the day, it's the spectrum, and Tim Kalman produced a spectrum and found that we have similar lines, but they are not strong enough, okay? So can we apply this to other systems? Okay. And I have a good news. Yes, with Sergey Daida, we and other members of my group, we came up with an approach where we can take any spectral energy distribution, okay, and with extra compute heating and cooling rates. Okay. So we can have that beloved Bremsstrahlung of 10 keV, as in Blondin. We can have a black body of a given temperature. We can have an X-ray binary in a low and hard or soft state. Type 1, type 2 AGN, different heat, different equilibria curves. Different, some of them are stable, some of them unstable, some of them have one stable zone, some of them have two stable zones, unstable zones. So it can be done, and we illustrated this in a paper that we recently submitted using a simple one radial flows with Athena++, and these are the solutions for different fluxes and different spectra energy distribution. There was a question why the flow is not following the equilibrium curve. As Nick mentioned, it is because the flow is expanding, so it is subject to adiabatic cooling, and if that cooling is faster than radiative heating, it goes away from the equilibrium curve. Let me show you a specific example, which is modified Blondin. It doesn't have any thermal instability, but with the luminosity is low, the gas is heated up, and it's very slow and cold, almost isothermal. But if you increase luminosity by a factor of 100 or 200, or 1,000, the flow is heated up more, and the velocity is higher and higher. And what is interesting is that that shape of the thermal equilibrium is a good proxy for determining what is the what the energetic of the wind will be, and whether or not it will be will have one or maybe even two acceleration zones. Okay. So photoionization is wonderful. We know very well how to identify places which are thermally stable and or unstable. We can follow the Fields criteria or Balbus criteria, and that's very important. But once you calculate heating and cooling rate, you also calculate opacities, okay? So electron scattering is easy, but due to X-ray absorption and due to lines, very, very, very many lines, half a million. But you can add up the contribution and compare with the opacity due to other sources. And what you find that the combined contribution from all the lines marked here by the red curve can be more, 3-4 orders of magnitude than electron scattering. Okay? So the 20 years, the 30 years of measuring, compiling atomic data is essential. So we have complete line lists. Okay, as the photoionization parameter increases, we ionize the gas, we lose the lines, so the force multiplier goes down. And by the way, the gas becomes thermally unstable because it is losing lines, which are main coolants, so we are left with Compton heating and Bremsstrahlung cooling. So the gas is unstable because it doesn't have enough lines. Okay, so the main question I have is, for a given SED, what is the maximum force multiplier in most favorable conditions so that I can check if the luminosity times opacity is higher than Eddington luminosity, whether or not I can have any hope of having an outflow. Okay, the left-hand side must be higher than the right-hand side. Okay, so we need extra, we need Cloudy and all the data to answer this question before we submit our job and run 3D simulations that will take long, long time for a graduate student to figure out. Okay. So a bigger picture. So we have a mass of the accreta that defines the Eddington luminosity. We have accretion luminosity, which is a function of accretion rate. And you can do the ratios and calculate Eddington fractions and Eddington fraction in the UV. If you have most of the lines in the UV, the luminosity in the UV is the key. Okay? So you plot one as the function of the other, and you pick different accretors with different masses and different radii, okay? And you can say, low X-ray binaries, gamma galactic black holes, can they have winds due to line driving? The answer is no, because the UV luminosity, even if the system is approaching Eddington luminosity, UV luminosity is very low, so that the product of maximum force multiplier and gamma UV is less than one. Okay? They are close or below that line. Then you have cataclysmic variables where the accretor is a white dwarf, or a fiori when the accretor is the main sequence star, and if the accretion rate is high enough. It is above this line. What else is above this line? Supermassive black holes. Okay. So these are the systems where you can develop and spend time calculating line driving. For this, you can forget it. Okay. You saw the diagram that the maximum force multiplier is a function of photonization parameter. So this line is not a solid line. Even I draw it as a solid line. It can be removed. That threshold can move up in AGN when you have a lot of X-rays and photonization parameter can be high. Okay, and then you are left only with those two systems. Okay. So with Jim Stone and Janet Drew, long, long time ago, we calculated this for white dwarf and a disk, and playing with different luminosities of the disk and the luminosity of the central star, where we played with the geometry of the flow. So remember, the difference between stellar winds and disk winds is in the geometry of the mass reservoir, geometry of the radiation field, and spectral energy distribution. If the luminosity is low and there is no central source, the wind is there, but it's time dependent. If you add radiation from the central source, the wind becomes smoother, easier to analyze. Beautiful. Then you can extend the domain. Before it was from 1 to 10, from 0 to 10, now it's from 0 to 100. You do not see wind being launched from all over the place. It's because the driving, launching, is due to interaction of continuum photons with UV lines. When you are very far from the disk, there are no UV photons. So the launching is only coming from the outer part. And in fact, here you have an accretion. There is some ambient gas that is being accreted. But if you add radiation from the central source, all of that which was hanging here around, maybe it was turbulent, who knows? This definitely, it will not contribute to the thermal broadening. It becomes much more organized, okay? And you see almost radial outflow. Still, the wind is not launched from here. What you have here is an outflow that was launched from here and just propagated out there, okay? So applications, spectral line distributions, depending on the viewing angle, in cataclysmic variables where that is quite well known, you have a P-signal line, absorption lines, or you can have a double peaked emission line for almost edge-on systems. So you take one specific system with the observed or measured luminosity of the white dwarf, luminosity of the disk, and mass accretion rate, and compute the solution. This is the M dot. It's small, okay? But this is not what observers care about. They like this picture. It's nice and colorful. Yet this is not what they want. They want this. a spectrum. Okay, so you compute spectrum. This is carbon 4 and silicon 4 line, and the solid thick line is from the calculations. In absorption, it's the model predicts a very good fit to the observations. In these calculations, I did not include scattered or emitted photons. Therefore, I didn't bother with the emission. More work is to be done, if allowed. Okay? So we are building up, transferring knowledge from OB stars to CV stars, confronting observations at every step. Okay? With a good degree of success. And then you plot mass accretion rate as a function of luminosity, or mass loss rate as a function of luminosity. And you find a trend that crosses are from numerical simulations for one specific model. And this scaling, that mass loss rate is proportional to luminosity to power of 1 over alpha, where alpha is not Shakura Sunyaev alpha. It's not only us who now learn only about two or three first letters of the Greek alphabet. Okay? This fit is reproduced by the data. And the cutoff where you never see an outflow is due to that opacity limit I mentioned earlier. Okay? So what is magnetic field? Okay, you add magnetic fields, and this is without magnetic field, this is with magnetic field. The flow is smoother. And what is more important, as you increase the magnetic field strength, mass loss rate goes up. Okay, this is beta, magnetic field increases to the left, and mass loss rate goes up. So when the magnetic fields are weak, you basically have the purely line-driven wind. If the magnetic field is strong, at the inner part of the disk, you still have line driving that dominates, but at the outer part where the line driving is weak and magnetic fields take over, okay? So now we've been irradiating the disk by radiation from the center. We've been using disk photons to irradiate disk matter. How about irradiating an outflow nicely launched by UV by X-rays from the center? What will happen to that? Will the photonization be so high that you run out of lines to drive the wind? Okay, so we are now moving to AGN. Okay, so yes, this is again about old simulations, but I will give you just an update, which is mostly about the new diagnostics and tests of that particular model of broad absorption line regions in AGN. Okay, so they have very broad spectra. So if you include only UV lag in CVs, you have a solution like that. We've seen this before. Okay, will this structure survive if we add X-rays from the center? And the answer that we got a long time ago was yes. Inner part will be fried, but will be there, and it will shield, protect the outer part. Okay? And it's fast, as in a broad absorption line, quasars, 20 kilometers per second and more, and very massive. Okay? Have a dozen of papers since then on actually reporting on work from months and months, trying to come up with methods to calculate spectra and collaborating with Chris Don, who is here, and Stuart Sim and Nick Higginbotten. What happened to, okay. So in CVs you have P-signal line profiles, in AGN you have also those. In some quasars you have broad emission lines. This is from simulation, the dashed line. A model for time is, and the inclination angle, 5 degrees, 20 to 35, 50, and 75. Just to have a good day, you connect those and you see that it works quite well. Okay? How about that? Discussion yesterday about double peak emission lines and single lines, and the comment that Christian made about the single peak even from a disk when you have a bit of an outflow. Okay, the X-rays change with inclinations too. Okay, so it all works pretty well. Oh, this is an updated list. Stuart Sim here and Nick. Okay. Okay. Now, the systems are vary. Whatever will happen at the center will propagate and the system will reverberate. No doubt about that. Yeah? So, Tim Waters and Amit Kashi spent a long time doing a fantastic job in computing response maps. Okay, delays and computing for different opacity of the line and measuring things properly. And you can extract information from that. But is it the right information? Information that most people want to have. It reverberates, but does this include information about the mass of the black hole? What is the condition for that? If this on the system must be virialized, yeah? Because what you do from delays, you calculate the distance, yeah? What you measure from the width of the lines is the velocity, and you want to connect it with the mass. But we are talking about outflows, disk outflows. They are not supposed to be virialized, yes? They say goodbye, and they fly very fast. They don't want to remember about the black hole. So let us finish by reminding ourselves about basic differences between accretion disks, which are flat, Keplerian, and virialized systems, where most of the velocity is in the rotation. Okay? Most of us, when we think about outflows, we consider them as spherical cows, supersonic, moving radially outwards. Okay? So they are not virialized. But disk winds came from disks, and for a while, if they are not accelerating very fast, they will have the main kinetic energy in the rotational component, which is still not modified much by the outflow. Therefore, if most of what we observed was formed near the disk base can be treated as still virialized. If you now remember that emission is weighted by the density, that makes this statement even stronger because the density is the highest near the base. Sometimes it's even density squared. Okay? So that information from reverberation occurring in a disk and its outflow, it contains, to some degree, the value of the black hole mass. Okay. So we need to think about disk winds in a different way, that there are different lines of sight, we intersect the streamlines at different angles with different velocity projected. Sometimes we are looking at the system not down to the center, but sometimes due to the outer radius, some other radius outside, okay? So these are not pure radial flows. So that was shown by Amit. So the future is multi-frequency radiation magnetohydrodynamics. Okay? If each of us will take care of one frequency.
Then it's still not enough.
But it will be a lot of fun, and I will take care of photoionization. Thank you very much.
Okay, I'm going to take chair's privilege and ask the first question, or, well, telling you stuff you already know. But just to say, you said line driving works quite well in AGN. Winds can shield themselves, but as you know, that doesn't work really possibly anymore as well once you allow for like proper radiative transfer, which is why we need to do this, right?
We are collaborators, so I have the two slides. So if you propagate the photons using Monte Carlo methods, What happens is that some of the photons are subject to more than one scattering, and they can go, let me show it this way. A photon launched this way will be absorbed and re-emitted in a random direction, yeah, isotropically. It can go this way and can go around the shield, okay?
Shielding is a
is so
tough.
It is to be tested with proper radiative transport.
Does it work anymore?
If you take so what we're saying is if
it's
you take
it's not the cross, but it's a consideration.
The correct, I think the answer is really, and this is Nick's work and Stuart's work, that if you take snapshots of the simulations that have been done in the past, they're not self-consistent. They would be way over ionized and they wouldn't work. But that doesn't mean that they couldn't work.
You close the loop.
Exactly.
Oh, sorry. So I got a question about the reverberation results at the very end. So, of course, what's really done in the data is there's a fudge factor that you try and calibrate with some sample. So what I think so. So what matters is that there's just a proportionality between the usual in the usual Vero relationship. So my question is that when you look at your simulations, you'll run them for different parameters, can you then look into them and recover at least that proportionality, recover a consistent and constant fudge factor?
Here's the fudge factor, F.
Beautiful, thank you.
The same name? Okay. So what we did, we basically integrated density weighted quantities, okay, and we divided them by gravitational energy. And so in this business, what matters is if that ratio for a given velocity that we measure, which is projected, is radius independent or radius dependent. And what we found, that the main component, you see, rotation, which is near the disk, its ratio is flat. So we are reproducing that even better than that. It scales with inclination in a way consistent with the one established by observers.
Okay, great. So it all works.
So you mentioned at the start, kind of in jest, about putting dust in, but Virginia Cherny's idea that you get a lot of the broadline emission region from a dust-driven wind, you could test that. Have you had a go? But in the same way, because
if
dust
I
has do, a bigger cross-section...
If I start working on this right now, I will give you an answer in 2 years.
Okay, I'll hold you to that.
Other questions? People are ready for dinner, it looks like. Okay, if there's nothing else, then I think we will in fact close and have dinner. But before we do that, let's thank Daniel and all the speakers again.
Thank you.